Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, December 10, 2021. It is a drizzly and somewhat gloomy morning here in Nashville. The weatherman is predicting warmer weather and perhaps some strong storms this weekend. As always, thanks to Ron Trammell and the Cats Tribute Band for our bluesy intro music. Back in October, I was able to attend the annual conference of the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association, we call it TRPA, which this year was held in Clarksville. I had not been to this meeting in many years, and so it was fun to renew friendships with now some of the senior leaders in parks and recreation in Tennessee, and also to become acquainted with some of the younger leaders. This is such a welcoming group of people who share the deep connection of the daily adventure of serving the public in parks and recreation. One such friend of long tenure is my guest today, Kitty Frazier, Parks and Rec Director for the City of Kingsport, Tennessee. Kitty is another of the pioneering women in the parks and recreation field here in Tennessee. To the best of my knowledge, she is the first woman to hold the position of Parks and Recreation Director for any municipality in our state, and she has paved the way for many others. I took the opportunity the other day to review the list of municipal park and recreation directors across Tennessee, and it is noteworthy just how many municipal departments are headed by women. For a profession once dominated by men, several of our large cities now have women directors, including Nashville, Clarksville, Murfreesboro, Franklin, and Kingsport, and they're doing marvelous things. Kitty is among the most dedicated professionals in our state. Whenever professionals are gathering, you can rest assured she will be there sharing her wisdom and unbridled enthusiasm. She was presented with the TRPA Fellow Award in 1993, and she has served as president of TRPA. She was recently named as a member of the prestigious American Academy for Parks and Recreation Administration. It was great fun to sit down and chat with Kitty about her career and life experiences. And our interview will get started just after these brief words.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Kitty Frazier, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Kitty, I'm looking at your screen, and behind you is a beautiful winter scene. You told me of the Allendale Mansion there in Kingsport.
Yes, we have a 25-acre southern mansion. We call it the White House of Kingsport because it looks just like the White House. And it's iconic for the community, beautiful background, and a great place to have weddings and events. And so we had a snowy morning, icy morning, so I put that on there for you today.
Very, very good. Love to see that. So I'm in Nashville. You're in Kingsport. Kitty, I know you're Parks and Rec Director in Kingsport, and I want to talk with you today. This is one of a series of interviews I've been doing with folks that have been awarded the TRPA Fellow Award. And in these interviews, I like to review the career of each of the individuals that are the subject of the interview. And typically, we start with a conversation about what your background in terms of growing up and what sort of got you interested in maybe having a career in parks and recreation.
Well, actually, it's kind of a combination for me that if I really look at my life, the beginnings and where I am, I've always been doing recreation. I grew up in West Knoxville in a small community, but the things that surrounded me in that community and as far as my family's activities truly were about recreation. I just didn't know it was called that. All right. So, for example, my dad was a hunter and a fisherman. We had a small family farm. So I learned about the value of outdoors, and I was outdoors playing all the time. They were involved in the community, whether it be church activities or the Lions Club, which was the primary group there that helped with a lot of, as far as civic clubs. So I saw that and I was involved in that, or whether it's nature, or whether it's, playing in local recreation leagues, or I worked at the church camps and those kinds of things. My first paid job was actually working as a lifeguard at the local swimming pool that my father and the Lions Club paid for and built.
Very
I'm
good.
probably one of the few lifetime members still at that pool. So I was doing that, but I didn't necessarily know at the time that there were professional jobs in parks and recreation. We didn't have recreation directors or anything like that there. So I went to college at ETSU. I was majoring in education, and I got a degree in education for K through 12 in science, biology, physical education, health, and a few other minor areas. And again, the recreation theme still, though, was in my life without it being official. So I played volleyball at ETSU. I was involved in lots of the intramural stuff. I worked in the intramural department. I worked as a lifeguard part time. I taught swimming lessons. So it has been woven into the fabric of who I am forever. It just wasn't known to be a professional field that I knew of, but I was in the teaching area, which is parallel initially.
Of course,
So,
yeah,
yeah.
exactly. So you're at ETSU, and graduated, and then what?
Well, I was at ETSU. I graduated. I came back to ETSU, was working on my master's, and was doing just, again, odd jobs every place, anywhere. You know how that is when you're in school and you're just trying to make a living and trying to survive. And I saw a application or a position open in Jonesboro, Tennessee, which was right next door for summer camps. And I had just gotten back from working in Texas at a Girl Scout camp for the previous summer. And I thought, well, I'll try something different. So I went to talk to them about that. And as it worked out, whatever, it wasn't going to work out with my schedule, their timing, all the above. But they said, well, we're thinking about starting a full-time program here in Parks and Recreation. Would you think about applying for that? And I was like, yeah, well, whatever, maybe, And then they actually had the advertisement on it. And I thought, well, I've talked to him, why not? And ended up taking that position as my first full-time career position. And that's when I started actually learning about the world of
Yeah.
recreation
Yeah. And that would
from
have
the
been
other side of the
when I first
equation.
met you, is when you got hired there.
Yeah. And so it was a great experience. I was the first Parks and Recreation director they had in Jonesboro. So I learned a lot from the boots on the ground, shall we say, and I didn't know a whole lot. I learned a lot. I'm still learning.
Well, let's talk
My
about that. You
education
know,
helped, but because it gave me background, my personal experiences helped a lot. But wow, was I green and unprepared. I will just
so we
say that.
have people that listen to this program from all over the U.S., and they may not be familiar with Jonesboro, Tennessee. So tell us what that charming little community is. Can you give us a little picture of
Sure.
that?
So Jonesboro is listed as the oldest town in Tennessee. It is a historic town and everything's on the historic register. It was at the time only about 3,000 residents, and I would say it's probably no more than five even today. It is a quaint, beautiful town with cobblestone streets and brick sidewalks. And one of the things that we did when I was there, because again, you're starting from scratch, but it was try to create things that were indigenous to the area, but also special flavor for Jonesboro. So I had to raise all my own money. I had to find all my own sponsors. I didn't have any staff. I mean, I drove the bus for the senior citizens center, the school bus, and I drug the ball fields. I mean, you do it all when you're a one man show. And there were finally a couple of maintenance people that worked with me, but it's all volunteers. But we started programs, especially special events was kind of the forte that I was able to capture and do things in a unique way. And Jonesboro still does everything in its own special, unique way. It's like home to me, and it's a great place to visit. They have the National Storytelling Festival there, which is known throughout the world. They have a Christmas in Old Jonesboro. They have historic tours. It's just, like you said, a very quaint, lovely, warm place to be.
Kitty, so much of the success of these small towns has to do with leadership, political leadership and administrative leadership. I know the story of Jonesboro a little bit. It was just being its own sleepy self until they elected a certain mayor who decided that it wasn't going to be sleepy anymore.
Yeah. So Jimmy Neal Smith was the mayor that you're speaking, I'm pretty sure, right. When I was hired. He was actually also one of the founders of the National Storytelling Festival.
Right.
And Bob Browning was the town administrator there. And together they were this creative dynamo group of people that said, we can be bigger, better, but we can still be ourselves. So they went after grants and started developing, again, some of that unique culture for Jonesboro. And that's actually how I got hired, because they were able to secure CETA, which was the federal work employment program. And I think you started under a CETA.
Exactly. In Gatlinburg,
I was a CETA employee. Yeah.
Yeah.
So with that, they were able to hire, I think there were seven of us that they hired at the same time, that they considered overeducated, unemployed, and part of the minority. So we all fit that category and started things like the program for parks and recreation. They had an arts program, a senior citizens, tourism, economic development, just a whole bunch of branches of government that Jonesboro had never had before. And so they were able to capture the grants and provide the funding for the staffing. Then they went after other, we all went after other grants to help provide support for facilities and programming. But you're right, Jimmy Neal and Bob and others, especially them, had this innate ability to just be bigger than ourselves. And it has paid off and been, you know, part of the mantra for Jonesboro forever.
Well, yes. I mean, it was always a cute little town. And I visited there back in the late 70s, and really nothing was going on until those guys got involved. And they started, as you said, started seeking grants and actually working the historic preservation angle, seeking to get sites on the register and all that kind of thing. So it's a tremendous success story. And certainly,
well, they still are. One of the things that I just recently heard, for example, that they're doing, which is pretty unique for this area, is they were working with a local county school system, and for whatever reason, there was not support to be able to do what they thought was needed, which was a new elementary school. So the town of Jonesboro is actually funding to build an elementary school that they will then contract out to the county. That's at least my understanding of the arrangement. But for the town to take on that type of an endeavor to build a school,
right.
I mean, that's pretty unusual. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a great example of how they just get things done. They figure out a way to get it done. And for a town of 3,000 to have a full-time park and rec director is very unusual in Tennessee.
I don't know, Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, and Sevierville did it, and they're not much larger, right?
Well, this is true. The tourist economy in those communities at the time was much bigger than Jonesboro's, but
yeah.
Still, it's a major deal and a contributing factor to their success that they chose to get you involved. And then I know you moved on, but that program later was headed by Ann Marshall.
That is correct. Yeah, I was the first, and Ann Marshall was second, and I think Krishna Goodwin might have been the third one. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So,
of course,
we've all supported each other and followed each other's careers around for years. So I was glad it was sustained. And the other side of that, to me, which is extremely surprising but rewarding, is some of the special events that we started 30 something years ago when I was there. They've evolved and they've been modified, but they're still there. So
that's just great. Oh, I hope we haven't lost you.
That again, surprisingly, they're still doing. They are not doing my first event. The first event I ever did there was a muzzle loading rifle turkey shoot. There again, you got to do it differently in Jonesboro, and axe throwing. So that one didn't last, but it was fun for a while.
Well, so very good. Now, you eventually moved on from Kingsport from Jonesboro over to Kingsport. Tell us how that came to be.
Well, again, I was in Jonesboro for a little over 5 years, and Kingsport's right next door. We're only, 15 miles away, and a position opened up for a director's position there. And I just felt like, it was time for me. I'd learned so much from Jonesboro. I didn't want to leave the area. I love the Tri-Cities. It's a great place to live and work and play. And this opportunity came open, so I was hired to work in Kingsport after I left Jonesboro, and I've been here ever since. I've had many opportunities to leave, but I don't know. It's a special place too, and we've had a lot of great success here and opportunities. And I just have over the years seen that it was a great place, and why leave something good, so keep going.
Kingsport, prior to your being there, has had some success in the parks and recreation field. I remember Gabe Prescott was the director there when I first got into Tennessee and getting to know people, and they were leading the way really in some ways in the arts and cultural programming back in the day when that was really not necessarily always going to be part of a park and recreation program. Only the folks that were innovative were doing those sorts of programs back in those days.
Oh, absolutely. When I came here, I mean, I walked into a wonderful situation that Gabe had set the foundation for. And actually, the first Parks and Recreation Director, there's only been three of us. It's like we love it so much, somebody wants to give it up. But W.H. McCorris was the first director. And believe it or not, he was the first president of the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association.
Now say the name again.
W.H. McCorris. We called him Mr. Mac,
Okay.
Hal McCorris. And he was the, like I say, the first president of TRPA.
I didn't know
So
that.
not only has Kingsport had a great foundation as far as recreation locally, but Gabe and Hal, of course, were involved on the state level and trying to establish that, perspective about the importance of the profession throughout Tennessee.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. As far as cultural stuff, when I came, two of the things that were so unique that I was so impressed with was we had was in the summer a deaf theater program, a theater program for the deaf. Now, this was early on when we weren't necessarily focusing a lot in the world on disabilities and special needs. So that was really unusual. There was musical theater, there was dinner theater. Like you said, the arts were alive and vibrant. And part of it was not just because of what the Kingsport community did, but what Gabe and others had set forth in the parks and recreation area.
Right. And they did certainly had all the basketball and baseball and softball and all those things that you would are foundational in parks and recreation. But who was the woman that was so involved in the theater program there?
Joan Hensley.
Joan
Joan.
Hensley. uh,
Yes.
yes 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 and I can remember her speaking at TRPA meetings and really challenging the leaders, the local directors, to look beyond the balls and bats, and really challenging people to do that.
Well, Joan would be thrilled. She has passed away, but she would be thrilled to know that you remembered her and that you felt that about that,
Oh,
because she was
absolutely!
really a force.
I can remember she did a program with Charlie Spears on the arts in park and recreation programs. And of course, Charlie, you'll recall as being an innovator and a leader. It was something that was impressive to me at the time. And just the thoughtfulness of a director to bring someone of that quality into a park and recreation program, speaks to the forward thinking of Gabe and the city of Kingsport.
Yeah, well, and I would say, thankfully that did set the foundation. And again, there were other groups in our community that, as far as that have been involved with the arts, but it has not stopped since I have been here. We are not directly responsible for the arts at the moment, but while I've been here, we started a public art program. We have murals on our greenway system. We've got murals and lots of our buildings. We have sculpture walks. We have still got some performing arts areas. So it is still extremely important to this community to have that.
Kitty, in preparation for our talk today, I got on your website for your department, and it's quite impressive. And one of the things that struck me right from the beginning was the Park and Recreation Master Plan, which is an incredible document. I can't say that I went through it in fine detail, but
You didn't go through 190 pages of it? My goodness.
it's a remarkable thing that you've put together. And it shows a vision that you guys have as a city for where you want to go with your program. Tell us about that plan and how it was developed.
Well, I would say that's been a long process, to be honest about it. I have been pushing to try to have a comprehensive master plan for a very long time. We've done pieces and parts of it. We did a miniature version of that many years ago through Partas, which you obviously know as far as being director of there at one point. And then we've done lots of independent master plans, but we didn't have it all captured together. About 3 years ago, our city leadership, though, decided that it was something we should pursue. So we were able to get funding to hire Reagan and Smith Associates to help lead that campaign for us. And it took about 2 years. Now, much to our demise, we started it 3 months before COVID hit
Oh
strongly.
no. Oh no.
Yeah. So it was a challenge to find ways to get public input, when you couldn't do anything in person. We had planned to do a lot of the community input sessions at events and places where we could actually walk and talk to people. And we didn't have those places because everything was closed and all our events were either canceled or minimized. So we had to really reach down deeply to find a way to reach out to people. And we did a lot of it through social media. We did some of it online through surveys. And then we did some mini sessions in places that we thought would be appropriate and still COVID safe.
Right.
And so I was still very pleased that overall we took longer to do it. It took us about a year and a half to put it all together because of COVID. But I think the end product was probably better because it was well thought out. It had a lot of different fingers to it that reached out into places we wouldn't have done on our own if we'd done the standard, here's how you do your public input, everybody just show up and put a sticker on the wall kind of moment. So.
It's a complex undertaking. In a city the size of Kingsport, which would I say, that's you're not a great big city, but you're a actual city, and you have a lot of different players on the landscape. I mean, you have a Tennessee State Park in within your city. You have Bays Mountain Park, which is a phenomenal city-owned facility. You have the YMCA, and you have all kinds of things going on. To try to integrate all those and to try to figure out what's your role to play, what's the role of the Park and Recreation Department? Was that a challenge for
Yes, it was because, like you mentioned, we are very diverse. We have a lot in this city to offer, but it's not necessarily all in one place. So, trying to capture what the Parks and Recreation Division and Department could be versus, like you said, some of the private entities, but still engage them into the process, ask for their input. So, we made sure that we sent things out to the Bays Mountain Park Association, for example, and we had one-on-one meetings with different leaders of the Y and different places so that they could be a part of it and give input into what they thought the vision should be for what they're going and where we might fit in into their plan and vice versa. So I've shared back and forth, for example, our plan with the YMCA's master plan. But it is challenging sometimes to find your lane and where you can excel and be the best at what you can be. One of the things I think that was probably the most rewarding in going through this process was to find out that we weren't off track already. It would have been really disheartening, I think, to have worked for years going in one direction and then find out that the public said, well, that's just not what we want. And you're totally screwed up, do something else. So to have some of the stuff we were already doing to be acknowledged and recognized that it was the right direction. They wanted more of it. They wanted us to continue on the path, as well as some new things. But that was good to hear that we
Well, give
had
me some
given.
examples. What was it that they liked?
Well, it was very clear in everything that we looked at and did that our community loves the outdoors. They love the Bays Mountain, like we said in the state park. They also want us to continue with greenways and trails, community parks, neighborhood parks. Sports and those kinds of things are sort of indigenous to recreation. So that was normal. But the outdoors, I think the pandemic enforced that, is reinforced that even more. So bikeways, greenways, blueways, trails, neighborhood connections, those kinds of things were right at the top of the list on everything that we saw that came back from the public, which
So
was where we were headed anyway, and something we'd been focusing on, and we think we have some great opportunities there. So it's a great fit for us.
now would be as good a time as any to talk about those successes that you've had. I can remember, I guess it was 1986 or so, participating in an opening of a greenway or a trail or something up there
Oh,
that
yeah.
you were involved with Charlie Howell, and I came up there to
I
see.
had forgotten that. You're
Yeah.
correct. Wow.
Down
Okay.
along the river, as I recall.
Yes. We have a,
Tell
we are one of the,
us about that program of greenways and
well, one of
bikeways.
the, and this was started actually under Gay Prescott, so I will not take any credit for the great success others have had. I just hopefully have respected it and helped it to grow and continue in their honor. But we have one of the few places in East Tennessee, anyway, that is actually on a river. So we have the Holston River that runs through Kingsport, both the North and the South Fork of it. So one branch comes out of Virginia, and another one is dam fed through one of the TVA dams and at Fort Patrick Henry. So we've got a great resource there. And the city had already developed before I came a park along the river called Riverfront Park. How, common is that? And it's also an historic district of town. So you have what is called the Netherland Inn, which is where they actually, the area of Kingsport was a boatyard area that people floated from King from to the port in Kings was part of it, the history, and I can't even go through all that. But anyway, there's a historic area on the park, and our first trail in Kingsport was about a mile and a half that followed the river,
Yes.
and is in that park. From there was a vision that said, we've got tributaries that flow into the river. How do we maybe make them connect? So over a period of several decades, we've been able to extend that first mile and a half to now go 11 miles total almost, and it connects the east and the west side of Kingsport. And we uniquely go from one historic site on one end of town to another historic site on the other end. So it's just been a great experience and a long journey to get us 11 miles, which doesn't sound like a lot to the big cities. Murfreesboro's probably got 40 miles. I don't know how much Nashville has, but for us, that's a huge achievement.
Kenny, by way of staff in your program there, do you have someone on your staff that's responsible for the physical development projects, capital projects, or is that something you handle, or how is that done?
I do them.
Yeah.
I am primarily the one that writes the grants, manages the grants, builds the projects, does the project management, does the capital improvements and stuff. And I love that aspect of it. So
Right.
I literally have had my feet in the dirt a lot on the trails as we built them and walked alongside many bulldozers.
You and I met a month or so ago, and we talked about that, about how unsure you felt of your ability to handle those capital planning projects, and looking at a set of blueprints was kind of confusing to you at first. But
Yeah, I was saying as an educator, the first project I worked on was in Jonesboro. We were building a park that had some ball fields on it, and it was such an eye opener to me when I was in planning meetings with architects and engineers, and they would talk about topography and electrical lighting levels and all those kinds of normal terms. And you didn't hear that in a physical education, health and wellness class,
Right.
So I remember talking to one of the architects after a couple of our meetings and just told them, I'm new, I'm young, I'm green, I have no idea what you're talking about. And would you teach me? I said, I can tell you every bone in a child's body that's involved when he, plays ball. I can coach him, I can tell you the rules of the game, I can be the cheerleader even if you need me to do that, but I don't know anything about what you're talking about. So thankfully, I had a lot of people in the architectural engineering field and in our profession. I mean, goodness gracious, all the people that we've networked with and have been partners in crime and been my mentors, I could never say thank you enough for that have helped teach me and are still teaching me about how to run this world of recreation.
What is in the future for the Parks and Rec Department there in Kingsport in terms of new developments or new programs?
Well, one of the things that's kept me here all the years is the fact it is a small town with a very big town idea. And so we're very progressive. So we continue to move forward at the current right now. For example, we are in the middle of building a $2 million skate park. I've got a pump track in line for next year, another skills trails area. We're doing another mile of greenway probably in the next year. We're going to hopefully implement some other components of the master plan, such as some more neighborhood park development. I've got another park that's in queue to a brand new park opening next spring that is on a different section of the same river, a different portion of it. And the list just goes on. We're very proud. We're also very busy.
That's you would have to be busy to handle those all that development yourself. In terms of recreation programming, how is that staffed out in your department?
We have various components, but primarily we have an athletics division, a community center division, we have the Allendale Mansion, and then just sort of a catch-all group. I don't have any staff. We serve a lot of people, like most departments, with very few. I only have 17 staff members, and out of those, six are maintenance. So I only really have 11 to 12 people running all these programs. We have a baseball program that's running 600 to 700 kids. Right now I've got 800 kids playing basketball. We had an event last weekend with a glow-in-the-dark Nerf ball challenge, and we have a special needs field. We opened up a miracle field last year, which is brand new.
Now tell us what that is.
So Miracle is a branded name, a miracle field, but it's basically designed for special needs and adaptive recreation. So it is a soft surface field. It's only about 150 feet long, but it's designed just like a baseball field.
Okay.
So we have children and adults. It's for any ages that are in wheelchairs, on walkers, with therapy dogs, playing baseball every Saturday, or what we would call baseball Saturdays. And we've had movie nights with them, and we've played wiffle ball. It's a brand new adventure for us. We just opened last year, and we have a huge adaptive playground beside it and a pavilion. And we hope to expand to maybe a bike park and a soccer field. So it's
for special needs populations.
We're the only miracle field between here and Chattanooga.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, Kitty, let's talk a little bit about your life as a professional. You and I have been friends for more than 30 years, and I would always see you at the park and recreation meetings, both state meetings and regional meetings. Tell us about your life in the park and recreation profession.
Well,
interacting with other professionals and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned before, it was clear to me that I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to learn from others. And I've been very blessed to be able to do that and have the opportunity to be associated with people like yourself or other people in the field. One of the ways to do that was through the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. This was our family, right? And our family of recreation. It is like a family to me. The people I've known, my friends and partners in crime throughout this profession, are friends for a lifetime, just like you. But to be able to share and learn from each other has been so valuable. And to do that, you know, you have to be involved to get anything out of it. So I chose to be involved with TRPA in a large form, whether it be in committees or as the president at one point, and still actively involved. I'm part of the Tennessee Parks and Recreation Education Foundation Board now. And truly, that has been a great way for me to give back to the profession that has given so much to me, as well as to learn from others. And I think we are very unique in our profession. I may not be true. I'm not in anybody else's world, but I hear people talk about when they come to our conference, or people that have been associated with us go, "You guys really like each other. You really share. You're a network. You are like one large unit with a lot of pieces in the middle." And I think that's true. because we all learn from each other and we're willing to give. And that's part of why we're in this profession, because we give back to others. And so I've been involved in TRPA, that expanded into being involved with NRPA. I'm also part of the American Academy, which is a very unique honor that I received. And I've done other things. Right now, one of my favorite things I'm doing is I'm involved with CAPRA, which is the accreditation program through NRPA. So I actually am a site visitor, and I've chaired and led several teams to various agencies throughout the country. And every year we look to see what they're doing and whether they meet the standards to be an accredited agency. And I come back with a million new ideas every place I go.
Exactly.
About
exactly.
how to do things and what's the best practices. And, right. you know, again, you just keep learning from each other.
So you skipped past this, but I don't want to skip past it. The APRS, the American Recreation and Park Society, is a select group, and you are a member of that. Tell us about that.
Well, I think you're referring to the American Academy.
Right? Yes, pardon me. Yes,
not the APRS. Yeah. APRS was an early branch of NRPA.
Okay.
But the American Academy, again, you have to be invited to be a part of it, and it's only for about 120 people at each time, and it's considered to be a think tank. It's the way it's looked at, as being practitioners. It can be directors. It can be educators. We have a lot of research people and educators into the group that focuses on research and the value of committee work and branching out. Right now, we do a lot with the gold medal awards through NRPA, mm-hmm. But there's a lot too about research, and there are some externs and interns at work. We try to mentor throughout the country and get involved in just those real fundamental things that everybody needs to know about and affect not just one part of the region of the country, but the whole country, and how we can inspire, influence, and advance, I guess you would say, the parks and recreation profession. So it is a true honor. And I also share that now with Larry Zender and Brad Chambers, are also a part of that.
Ah, okay. And, you know, I guess that there's also people from academia in that organization.
Yes. Right. Yeah. It's not just Parks and Rec directors. It right. is a blending. And there's quite a bit right. of the academic world involved
right.
in that.
Quite an
and
honor.
I, you know, it's the only truly I'm the first Tennessean. You know, I would say I'm very proud of that, to ever be invited to be a part of this group.
Fantastic. That's just quite an honor. So tell us about what you do for fun.
About everything. You know, why would you be in this profession if you can't enjoy some of it too? I mean, it's
right.
like, it is a part of our blood. It's in our system. It's who we are, or we're not very good at it. It's the way I would look at it. If you don't enjoy recreation on your own, it'd be very hard to provide it for someone else and think about, you know, what they're enjoying. Why would you do that? So I do a little bit of everything. I've always enjoyed sports. Like I said, I played volleyball in college, and I believe it or not, I'm still playing. I play at the senior level, and I do various sports. I've done song and dance. I volunteered with therapy dogs, and I work very strongly with my Rotary Club, church. I don't know, you name it. I will probably.
And horseback riding.
And horseback riding, yes. Yes,
very,
I do like
very
animals.
Fun. Very fun. The, you know, Kingsport is a city manager form of government there. Tell us what your experience is in dealing with a mayor and council and city manager. And I mean, you know, some directors fail at that and lose their jobs, and it becomes a political nightmare for them. Others like yourself can very successfully deal with whatever the form of government is. Any observations or secrets or hints or suggestions for others about how to manage a city manager or mayor?
Well, it's survival of the fittest sometimes, as we would all know. I'm lucky that I've survived in Kingsport 11 mayors and 8 city managers.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah. So I really believe with any job, though, you have to learn from each other and be partners. So I try to support whatever that elected party's agenda is and still accomplish what I think is good for our community. And hopefully we're on the same page. It may not be the same direction all the time, but ultimately I hope that we're in the on the same purpose and intent. And if you can try to figure out what their intent is and what their needs are and try to weave it into what you're doing, it'll all work out. You sometimes you have to just kind of work within that moment to find out again what is the current culture, what is the current need and interest for the political leadership, whatever it may be, and what the agendas are. There's always room for recreation. It's just a matter of trying to figure out your priorities might change, your focus might change, but there's always a need for that. And I think we have a an easy route to be able to show to most elected officials why it's important, the value of it, and the purpose. Sometimes you may have to fight for the priority of it. That's the hard part. Sometimes you may not be the highest priority as another public entity, whether it's police, fire, public works, take your pick. But I think everybody knows the importance of what we do. It's just keeping it in the forefront, and again, trying to figure out how to help them understand what we do, as well as us help understand what they do. But I would say the greatest advice that, and I won't say who it was, someone in our Parks and Recreation told me one time, your best adversary is your best advocate, and at the same time, let your enemies become your friends, as they say, and then keep your head low in the foxhole, and the bullets will fly over your head.
In the Parks and Rec department can be a very visible, people are not afraid to complain.
True.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think it's unusual. You might agree with this too, having been in this profession a long time. The thing that still astounds me is how many times I go, I've never been asked that before. Or that one's a new one. Okay, that's a new, okay, now what? It's sort of that, and I'll use as an example, last year during COVID, I think we all experienced a whole new world and had to reinvent ourselves in lots of ways, especially in parks and recreation, where when we're a hands-on delivery system and we're with people all the time, and all of a sudden the people were gone and we had to figure out how to reach out to them and what to do. But I will say that the community and people found ways to be creative on their own without us even having any idea what direction that would go. And some of the humorous moments were for us, for example, we had some significant rainfall in the spring when some of the first really strong wave of COVID went through and we started closing facilities. And so we weren't doing soccer programs, and I had closed our soccer facility, and we had some serious rain. And the next thing I knew, we had jet skis out in the flooded waters on our soccer fields.
Oh
And
my
it was posted
goodness.
all over social media. The best place to come with your jet ski and your kayaks was to this park.
Oh my
That was
goodness.
never designed for that purpose. It was very interesting to see that happen. And then I found out that there wasn't anything I could do about it because it was considered a waterway of Tennessee when it flooded. But who would have ever thought jet skis, right? Then we
Exactly.
had people doing things like drag racing in the parking lots because the parking lots were empty. We had people building campfires in our parks because they wanted to get out and they didn't want to go far away. So they created their own campground. So again, it's not that these were all negative. It was just creative moments. And like I said, you never know in parks and recreation what tomorrow will bring.
Kitty, do you remember Johnny Paul Wells?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so for my listeners, Johnny Paul Wells was the superintendent at Warriors Path for many, many, many years there in Kingsport. And I can remember, and you talk about funny things that you've observed in the parks. One of the most noteworthy funny things I've ever observed in a park happened while walking around Duck Island. At Warriors Path State Park, and Mr. Wells said to me, "Mark, you're liable to see anything here." And just as he said that, some guy had a groundhog on a leash walking him around
Wow.
the park, and I'm like, oh my God, you couldn't make that up. I mean, if
No.
you sat down to try to imagine some weird circumstance, you couldn't imagine something that weird.
No, yeah, you
But
couldn't.
it was just that was just a normal day at Warriors Path State Park.
I remember coming, it wasn't quite that extreme, but I remember coming upon some people in recent years that we were having trouble with some feral cats in one of our parks. And so I saw these people with cages and they were letting the cats out. And so I stopped and asked them what they were doing and said, I'm sorry, but that's really disruptive, whatever. And we ask you not to do that. And they said, but it's perfectly okay. I said, why is that? And so, well, we caught them, we went and had them neutered, but now we're going to bring them back and we'll feed them and we'll take care of them. And then I looked up on in the ridge line above us and the entire hill was covered with homemade cat houses. And
Oh my goodness.
yeah, it was just like 30 or 40 just spread all over the place. And they had this major colony of cats that they were taking care of on one of my parks. And so, again, I could have never imagined or dreamed that one, but it was real.
Well, yeah, parks and recreation is an adventure every day. Yeah, you never know what's gonna you're gonna encounter next.
I would say one of the more unique questions I've ever been asked was I had someone that wanted to know if they could bury somebody in their family in the middle of one of my community parks. They had lived in the neighborhood and they wanted to actually have a burial ground right in the middle of the playground. And I don't think we approved that one, but
No, oh my
yeah,
goodness.
so yeah.
Well, Kitty, it's been fun to speak with you today, and to share our recollections about these many years. So, thank you so much for agreeing to do this, and congratulations to you on your remarkable career.
Well, thank you, Mark, for allowing me to be a part of it, even though I wasn't, one of your, most enthusiastic joiners initially, but I appreciate what you've done for the profession, that you've stayed amongst the family, shall we say, and that you are sharing with the rest of the world, some of the people in Tennessee, the fellows, whoever. I've seen several, I've listened to many of your podcasts that have made such a difference for the lives of the people that live and work in Tennessee. And thank you for highlighting that.
Well, thank you, and we'll hope to see you again at one of these family meetings.
That'll be great.
All right.
Have a Merry Christmas.
You too.